IPE@WU Analysis, the podcast by students of the Institute for International Political Economy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of our podcast. My name is Rafaela, and I'm here with my colleagues Michael, Ibrahim, and Lisa.
Hello, thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm very glad you're here too. So today's topic is all about different approaches regarding monetary policies, exchange rates, and financial regulations. For some real-life examples, we're going to compare three countries who seem very similar at first glance, but chose three different strategies concerning their monetary systems. Also, in regards to the Munsell-Fleming's dilemma, they all put themselves at three different positions. Whether you're interested in executing some foreign investments yourself, or you're just aiming to learn a little bit more on the topic, I'm sure this episode will give you some new insights. So let's start. We are going to demonstrate different strategies comparing three different countries, as I already explained. Our three actors are Brunei, Fiji, and Kuwait. Even though the three countries aren't geographically close to each other, they do share some similarities. For example, Brunei, Fiji, and Kuwait are relatively small countries, with each having a population less than 5 million inhabitants. In each country, the government also plays an important role in economic developments, for example, by implementing different regulations in the financial market. Something all three countries also have in common is their struggle to diversify their economies besides their main income sources, which we're going to hear a little bit more about later. So now that we know about the similarities of our actors, let's see how they're different and compare them side by side. So let's hear what my colleagues have to say about this topic.
Yes, I would start for Brunei. And I think Brunei is a very interesting country. It is located near to Singapore, which is the only country which is the neighbor to it. And yes, it is interesting because its money policy started back in 1967, and from that on, the first bank, national bank, as so called, there was the Brunei Darussalam Currency and Monetary Board, which changed in 2011 to the Authority Monetary BD. And yes, what did they do? So, would you explain which two points of the monetary trilemma they chose?
So yes, Brunei chose to tie its monetary policy to Singapore's monetary policy by fixing its currency at a 1-to-1 ratio to the Singapore dollar, and by that they don't have an independent monetary policy. They are also, which I think is an important point, is they are a member of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. So they are committed to have a liberal capital market within that region and engage in liberal trade with those countries. So that also affects Brunei's policy by having a free capital inflow and outflow policy.
Yes, and yes. What I would like to add to that, in 1967, with the Currency Act with Singapore, as you said, as they attached their currencies 1-to-1, and it is also able to pay with both currencies in both countries, as they both accept each other. It also applies to Singapore. In 1972, as Singapore is the much bigger and much more important country worldwide seen, they started to float in reference to the US dollar, so this also affected Brunei and was part of their strategy. And I would think that also the production sector of Brunei is a very important to say. Would you tell us which is the most important one?
Yes, Brunei is also, like other countries we're going to talk about in this podcast, a very resource-based economy. It is highly dependent on its oil exports and general resource exports. And as Rafaela has said, the diversification of the economy is not very far in that country. So that will very much affect the further discussion we're going to have here.
So, and to put that in reference, the exact number of production in from export in 2021 was 78% of all exports were in the mineral fuels and mineral oil sector, and 17.8% at second place the organic chemicals. And as you could do the math, there aren't many percents left for the rest. So the third place is only 1.23% for nuclear reactors. So they basically are only relying on their mineral fuels reserves, and about 21% of its trades are with Singapore as their neighbor.
Very interesting. And if we can summarize it and also look in regards of the Mundell-Fleming trilemma, where Brunei is located.
So Brunei does have a fixed exchange rate, a free capital movement policy, but it does not have an independent monetary policy, exactly like we explained previously, by tying their currency to the Singaporean dollar.
Yes, thank you very much. So let's continue with our second actor, which is Fiji.
So thank you for your explanations on Brunei. Next we have Fiji. In contrary to Brunei, Fiji is a small island nation in the South Pacific. So they're not so rich on natural resources. So they have to focus on tourism, because
Just in general, it's a very popular destination. So there's many tourists coming in and out. That's true.
Yes, and it is a very small country, and they have to also to make specialization to their production, and which isn't very, very strong, but it is there, and it is mostly primary production, also farming and others as sugars,
and gold
for around, thank you, and about 70% of all their production is going to the export sector. So relying on the production, it is mainly depending on exports too.
Yes, so they're very depending on foreigners as well. So that's a reason maybe why they chose to have independent monetary policy and free capital movement. So
it has more free cash flow. And if we again keep in mind the Mundell-Fleming trilemma, since they already have an independent monetary policy and free cash flow, it is unable, like they're unable to have a fixed exchange rate.
Yes,
therefore
exactly.
They have a floating one.
Yes, and the Fiji dollar is for now situated at 0.5, so one US dollar equals to two as a Fiji dollars for now, with today's rate. And I think that Fiji also wants to still have an independent money policy. Shows that in the 1998, they purposely chose a devaluation of their own currency because they wanted to still be contestable in the global market. So when you're talking about the primary production for sugar and others.
Yes,
and in addition to that, it can be said that they want to keep close to their major relations to their trading partners, Australia and New Zealand, which also set a quite similar monetary policy as well.
Yes, thank you so much. So we also have a third actor in our case study, which is Kuwait. Could you tell us a bit more about this party?
Yes, Kuwait is also a very small but also very oil-rich country in the Middle East, like Brunei is. And they have a population of around 5 million people. And where they fall in this Mundell-Fleming trilemma is that they also have a fixed exchange rate. They tie their currency to a basket of currencies which are dominated by the US dollar. And But what Kuwait does differently from a country like Brunei is that they restrict capital outflows. They have strict restrictions on capital movement, and that has multiple reasons.
Yes, one of the reasons could be that there are a lot of immigrants in the country. There are more than 60% of the population of Kuwait are foreigners,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they chose to limit the amount of dinar that can be converted into foreign currencies each year.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see later some of the other reasons why they chose to do so. So, yes.
Thank you so much to my experts. So now we're going to continue by comparing our countries, who seem very similar in some aspects, and see why they chose different monetary policies. So our first one would be Brunei and Kuwait, who chose to have a fixed exchange rate, whereas Fiji has a floating exchange rate and focused on different aspects. Could you maybe tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. When we're talking about Kuwait and Brunei, we have to point out that these both countries, as mentioned before, they are very dependent on trade, especially on their exports, and they prefer stable currencies to attract exporters to have stable prices. So they don't want the oil prices to fluctuate, so they really prefer these stable currencies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and in comparison to Fiji, to that, they obviously are in a complete other production branch, whereas they are doing primary production, as we already said. And yes, what is also a really big point in this, it comes with the production and with the fossil fuels and oils, is that they are in a very different financial situation. As Kuwait, for example, is considered a very rich country,
yes.
And Fiji is very poor and is also affected by many, many natural disasters,
mm-hmm.
Because it is located in Oceania. And I think that will have to do with that too.
Exactly. That is also, like Fiji really points out here between all these countries, because they are basically a lower to middle income country, like Michael has said.
Yes, do you know about some steps that Fiji has taken in the recent years, since they were also affected by the COVID pandemics?
So Fiji is a country which is not only affected by COVID, but also of natural disasters as hurricanes and such things. And because of that, Fiji has always in need that it has to get investors from other countries, because they need the money.
Mm.
So they don't can rely on serving their own purposes. So they need a own money policy to gain that they could manage their own position according to their position, which could really change in tremendous ways in just a couple of days. So they have to make adjustments to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a good point, as I already mentioned before. That's why they have a floating exchange rate, in contrary to the other two countries, because they want to stick up to their trading partners, and they look up to Australia and New Zealand and other Asian countries, including India, that already have a floating exchange rate since the 1980s.
Thank you. Those are some really interesting insights we just heard. So let's look at another factor we have. As we already heard in our explanations, there are two countries who share a free cash flow policy, which are Brunei and Fiji. So let's discuss a little bit why those countries chose to have a free cash flow and not put any regulations.
So with Fiji, I think that is very obvious, because the tourists come and go, and
mm-hmm.
They need money from other investors, from also foreign investors from Australia and New Zealand, and why would an investor from those countries invest in Fiji, which isn't that interesting to invest in if they don't get their money out again? So this is a real problem, also would be a real problem. So I think that isn't even an opportunity for Fiji to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in regards of Brunei, I think they are very fortunate to have a neighbor like Singapore, and they take advantage of a very stable market like Singapore with a very experienced central bank to take over basically Brunei's job to regulate their currency. So Brunei does only have limited resources in that regard, so they choose to give that obligation to country.
Yes, and Brunei also, what has to be mentioned there, has such thing which is called an orthodox currency board, which means that they are always backing up their own currency with 100% of foreign assets or foreign currencies, so that they rescue their currency from devaluation.
So on the other side, there's Kuwait. Kuwait is a rich country, so they're not so dependent on other countries. So it's easier for them just to stick to their own policy and just say, no, we don't need free capital movement, we can restrict it, because it's good for our own economy and we don't need the others as much as Fiji and Brunei may do.
Yes. So it's more a matter of dependency also.
Yes.
Yes, and I would also add that Kuwait has a lot of capital to begin with. So they have these strict restrictions to basically ensure that control of its natural resources remains in the hands of its citizens, of its local citizens, because as Lisa has mentioned, there are a lot of immigrants. Yes.
Yes, thank you so much, everyone. Thanks especially to my experts who were here and had such great explanations and hypotheses. I think if we would all come to an agreement that the most important role is the economics and the role the country plays, mm-hmm. How it gets its income, etc. For example, as we're here with the incomes and with the exports of oil, that will be our conclusion. Thank you so much for being here and spending this time with me and talking about this topic.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Talking. And to our listeners, we see you next time. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Want more information? Visit the Institute for International Political Economy at www.wu.ac.at/IPE. You will find podcasts analyzing current events, TikTok videos defining key concepts, and courses explaining the world.